Hey.
Awesome.
We're back. We've got David Fowler, principal dev from Microsoft. We've also got his bosses and buddies over here. Where's Mike and Lewis? They're on the audience too. So we've got people who can answer questions, and they'll be here all week. We're going to be talking .NET on the server deep dive. And because we've got David, who is a developer, we have no slides. He doesn't know how to launch PowerPoint.
So I do. I can.
So with that, okay.
All right.
So
what's first?
The way I was thinking about doing this, David, is that they know nothing, I know nothing, you know everything. That's kind of a problem. So we need to change that balance of power here, and I want to understand what's going on. So let's talk about some stuff at a little bit deeper level than we did with Hunter.
Yep.
So this is just a file new project, correct?
Yep.
Have you done anything with this yet?
Nope. This is, well, not really.
Anything fancy?
Not really.
Not really?
Yeah.
Well, we can't, not really means like there's nothing hidden in there, right?
There isn't, no.
Okay. So talk to me about class libraries. A number of people came up, and one of the things that Hunter and I didn't show was, you know, adding your own class library, file new class library and all that. How do I do that in this world?
So we have a new class library type. I'll add a project here. It's my advanced class library. And it's class library 1 by default. Hit OK. Okay.
So it added it automatically.
Yep.
And it didn't add a reference or anything.
Didn't.
And it looks like a regular class library that we're used to seeing.
Except for this new thing, which is the same as before.
Is that bad?
Sort of. But hand wave. It's alpha. Still fine.
Should we open with an error message? That's good. So it's interesting, though, that every project has a project.json.
It does.
Okay. And is this a kproj or something? There's a little project file for Visual Studio to kind of keep it together.
Yes.
Okay.
And so now I can add a reference by right-click. No, I'm joking. You go here, and you type.
So you're back in the web app.
Yep, back in the application. And I can go here and get IntelliSense for the class library.
So it knows. So the solution knows that that class library just got added, and it got first in my list there.
Yeah.
Does it have a version? Like these have versions.
It does 1.0, but you don't have to put it.
So you can just say class library and no colon, and it'll just work. Or you have to say quote.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And now I can get IntelliSense for. I should be able to get IntelliSense for class 1.
Okay.
Stuff.
Cool. So everything, that's pretty much like I thought it would work.
Yep.
That's a good sign.
So let's create a method here, get hello, and do tech
edit. So just to be clear, I want to make sure you're going real fast. You got to bring
it. I am.
It's like a 400 level, got to bring it down, though. He's typing get hello, which is a function that doesn't yet exist. I assume you're then going to do the gesture that then creates that function
over there? I would, but it's not working. Alpha bits.
Did it work?
Oh.
Hang on. Could we have more people yell at our... main dev. I think it's great that you're in charge of this project, but they're like, you missed a quote! If you could be there when he's working on the next version of ASP.NET, that would be super helpful. Let's make him feel welcome here on stage. All right, everybody? All right. I try not to criticize the primary developers. Yeah, okay.
Right.
So get hello would be a method over there.
Create a method over here. Static. I'll erase this.
Everything good is static, yeah.
Yes. No. I'll return hello plus the actual. Let's change the name to something else. Should we call it a message?
Poop.
Okay.
I didn't think you were really going to do it. Keeps it real. All right, message.
Save it.
Good.
Okay. So now we have a default controller that calls get hello in the class library. And I can hit Control-F5 and run this app.
And just like the web app, the class library does not appear on disk as a DLL.
Correct.
Is it a DLL?
Let's test it, actually. So it ran.
It's got its own folder.
The bin folder's here. And it has nothing in it.
OK, so that's significant. The bin folder here has literally nothing in it. Show me the bin folder of the web app. That's got some stuff in there.
This is a bug.
So, but remove everything that's not a bug.
This is supposed to be there, too.
So that is important.
Yes.
So we'll hold on to that. We're going to come back to why the web app has an ASP.NET Loader DLL and why the other one does not.
Yep.
Okay, and I can debug and move around in that other app, that other thing, just fine.
Yeah, so I can actually change this code to hey, and hit save. And if F5 here. This is right app.
Did it know that it changed?
So it knows what went into compilation. So it knows that you have a class library reference, and it can actually it knows which files went into the compilation. And when that changes, it can actually detect that and kill the process. And when it starts back up, it actually compiles the application on load.
So is there a file watcher? What is it watching?
So the file watcher watches all things that go into the compilation. So as we're compiling, we actually have a list of CS files that go into the compilation, and we know when those change. And when those change, we kill the process, and VS says, VS restart the process, and it just recompiles on first request.
So is that the process right there?
It is.
And will that blink or disappear if I do my compilation?
So if you watch it closely, I do hello.
So we're watching the lower right corner here. Watch that space down there. That's IIS Express.
Saw
that disappear, and it showed back up again.
So every code change is a full recycle of a process.
So every code change is a full recycle of a process sounds scary and bad. Why is it not?
Because of Roslyn.
Okay. And
it's fast. It's fast.
Could you expand on that? Because of Roslyn.
Yeah. It's very fast. It's super fast. Yeah.
How fast is it? It's in memory, though, right? That is the key, right?
Yes, it's memory compilation. So you never have to hit this to write artifacts. There's never a check to see if things are out of date. You always just have to compile in memory as you go. So you never have to kind of check timestamps and all that extra word that MS Build does by default.
When I'm helping people optimize their existing Visual Studio experience, the development experience, I almost always recommend an SSD. Huh. I know that's a bad thing to say, but Visual Studio, it's not that Visual Studio is slow, it's that the work involved in compiling an application is non-trivial from a disk I/O perspective.
Yep.
I've seen people with spinning Rust, non-SSDs, who will make RAM disks and do their compile to RAM disks, just like anything that they can do, because we're bringing all of the CS files up, we're writing them all out, out of DLLs, and object files and PDBs.
Folder, yeah, PDBs.
So where are the PDBs and where's the obj folder?
Good question. So if I actually hit F5.
I asked a good question?
That's a good question.
Awesome.
Did you make that yourself?
No, I was really stressed out.
Let's go to the debug modules window.
Because we are still debugging here, and you can see everything. It works exactly as before. So just to make sure, he went debug Windows modules. This is actually one of the really useful things that very few people ever bother going to. I know a lot of techies that will go to Process Explorer before they'll go to the modules window, because they forget that it exists.
Yeah. So the question is, how can you debug if there's no PDB file on disk?
Can you zoom in on this?
How do you zoom in this thing?
Whatever that button is in a plus.
Oh, really?
hit minimize that, and then hit window plus again. Isn't that cool?
Amazing.
And then minus will take you out.
This is crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad that you're learning now when we're on stage at TechEd. Okay, so this is all of the modules that we've got loaded in, and it's showing actually where they're coming from on disk.
It's a lot of assemblies.
All the assemblies.
Yeah.
Is there a difference? The word module and assembly, are they the same thing?
They are, but let's not go into the details.
Okay.
It's very strange to describe. So class library 1, and the application is here.
How come it doesn't have a path name?
That's because it's dynamic in memory. And it says symbols, it says dynamic right there.
So the symbols themselves, so the PDB is dynamic as well.
Yep, and VS knows how to ask the runtime for PDBs in memory, so it works just fine in VS.
And no one knows,
no
just
one knows.
Works.
Yeah, just works.
Someone asked earlier at the very beginning of the talk with Hunter, how would I know to put it in debug mode or release mode?
We don't have support for that yet, but when we do, it'll work like it does before.
So everything. So now we have nothing for this release, but there'll be some gesture to switch it.
Likely there'll be something like crazy, like, I don't know, debug.
So it'll be a configuration.
Yeah.
So just like it's a configuration here, there'll be
Correct.
One down there.
Yeah.
Okay. And those modules that are in memory there, what would that look like if I looked at like Process Explorer?
Let's try it. I think I have it somewhere.
Procexp.
Tools.
Okay. So Process Explorer is from SysInternals. It's a Rusinovich tool, and it's like Task Manager on steroids.
Yeah.
Okay. And it takes a second to start up the first time.
Super fast.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a big deal. Okay, so let's slow down here. So you're on the IIS Express.
Oh.
Is that the correct process?
It is.
So that's IIS Express.
So this is actually
he's hitting properties.
The cloud optimized version.
Ah, so this is interesting. So zoom in on those tabs here. So he's got performance and graphs and all this kind of technical stuff, and it talks about there. Notice the command line, IIS Express, then it's got the IIS application host config. This is the standard IIS stuff
yep.
that we expect to see. There's really nothing there that seems interesting to me. And if you notice here where it says app pool, it's even assuming a CLR 4.1,
yep.
and we're going to get into that a little bit yep. because you just said this particular app, if you can go to the properties and show us which version of the framework it's using, go ahead and go back into VS and properties. What are we using here?
Right there.
Okay, so that's using the cloud optimized version.
Yep.
In Process Explorer, in the tabs there, we don't see .NET modules. Can you switch it? Is
yeah,
it possible?
Let me switch it.
And then do that? That's because Process Explorer, correct me if I'm wrong,
yep.
doesn't yet know about this kind of thing.
Nope.
So then I would expect, and I'm totally guessing here, if you do this and recompile and run it again and go into Process Explorer, then we're going to see the .NET modules there. So then the question is, how come Visual Studio knows about it and Process Explorer doesn't? Is it just because somebody updated one and not the other?
We got to tell Mark.
You need to tell Mark?
Yeah, to fix his stuff.
You heard it here. We are streaming, so he's probably watching.
Oh, it's recorded. Oh, no. So we should see no.
I will tell Mark. Go watch that video about 13 minutes in. Yeah, so then .NET Assemblies and .NET Performance shows up now in a tab there within.
Aww.
You have to be administrator rights, so cancel out file. And there's an admin elevation. Here.
Oh, file.
You can do it right there. Percentage of stuff will elevate itself. No, not there. File, show details for all processes, self-elevates. Isn't that cool?
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. All right, so there's the worker process. Properties. Ah!
Too close.
Ah, and look at that. So zoom in here. He actually gives us a different kind of information. This is the same view. Understand that we're looking at the same stuff that you would get from the windows and modules in VS. It's just a different, one person's different perspective on it. So he's got a little bit of a tree view there, and he's actually calling out dynamic.
Yeah.
And but he doesn't know its name, though. Oh, there's class library one.
They're all here, yeah.
Okay, so what's the host?
So this is our managed code, the first entry point. After booting the CLR, we call into some managed code that we'll call into your app. So IIS Express, our Ethernet loader, launches our runtime to boot into your application itself.
Okay, so if we look at the process tree, there's IIS Express, which is a an unmanaged
yep.
thing that is our host for this
right.
example. And then IIS Express knows that it's going to be, thinks that it's going to be doing .NET 4.
Yes.
And that's okay.
It's okay.
And then who stops IIS Express and gets you involved?
We put a hook in .NET 4.5.1 to circumvent the pipeline for ASP.NET, and we use that hook in this world to boot core CLR or desktop CLR. So in the bin folder, the ASP.NET loader is this magic assembly that that the runtime uses to call into. So it's kind of, so it says, let me start ASP.NET, and it sees the assembly in bin, and it says, okay, that's there, so I'll call you instead and give you full control. And that handles the pipeline and launches our KLR host itself.
Okay, so the existence of the file.
Yes.
No registry keys,
yes.
No GACT stuff, no secrets. There's a check in 4.5.1 that says,
pure
if
magic.
That's there, call it.
Call it.
If it's not there, what happens? And then the regular. It'll use the regular ASP.NET loader.
Yeah, full desktop.
Okay, so then that means today, for now,
yep.
the only thing you need in your bin folder is that.
Yep.
And then the class library doesn't have that
yep.
because it's not a web app.
Yep.
If I delete that, bad things will happen. It'll fall apart.
Want to try it?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's locked.
It's probably locked. Okay. Will I always need that file, or is there some world where that'll just be built in? Right now, I'm going to need one
yeah.
for every web app.
So in the future, we plan to have a native module for IIS that'll be built into some version of Windows in the future. And that will actually know how to load core CLR natively, so you won't have to have this thing in bin folder anymore.
Okay.
It'll understand the actual runtime.
So that's an interesting thing, that there's the packages that are local that make sense to be local.
Yep.
And then there's the big stuff that we put in kind of a global system-wide cache.
Yeah.
And in this case, this is like a little utility.
The bootstrapper, yeah.
For while we're doing alpha stuff.
Yep.
When we bake it, then we'll give it to somebody, and then they'll build it into something else, and
yeah.
it'll just work.
Yep.
Okay. do I need to have .NET 4.5.1 on a machine in order to play with this? Sounds like I do.
Yes, you do.
Okay. Yeah. But .NET 4.5.1 in this case is just getting us that hook.
Yes.
And is .NET 4.5.1 in there with us? If we look in the process explorer, is it hanging out? Is there 4.5 stuff in a...
Actually, if you stared here, there were three app domains.
There's three app domains.
It's kind of crazy. The shared domain, which has like all the stuff that's shared across all processes. So the core framework, MS Core Lib, the stuff you know, system collections.
Is this the full CLR?
Full
right
CLR,
now.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it starts up a Bootstrap app domain, which has just the loader. And then that creates another app domain, which has your app. This one goes away. This one stays around. And we do this kind of crazy handshake to make things work well.
So you guys are following this? So is an app domain is like an apartment in an apartment building. So the apartment building is IIS Express, the executable process.
Yep.
There's three little sublet apartments inside.
Yep.
The shared one is shared
across
all .NET processes.
Yep.
For memory reasons.
Yep. And gen images are all shared. They're all .NI.
And then could you zoom in on that right there? So ASP.NET custom loader.
Yep.
Okay. So that's that.
That's the hook.
That's the hook.
Yep.
And that's the magic.
That's the magic.
Okay, cool.
Then that guy calls back into KLR host and says, create me a K runtime, which does more loading of assemblies.
So let's do this. Can you self-host this app? Can you make this run from the command line?
You can, with some magic.
Okay.
So I need that web command from somewhere, but I'll just...
That's not something you like to do.
I'll try to make it up. I'll make it up. Command.
You may be able to do it yourself?
I don't know.
My brain hasn't adjusted to JSON yet. I'm an old angle brackets guy. I can't deal with you kids and your curly braces. There you go.
Server equals. I was going.
It's
good.
Comforting that one of the main developers is can't spell Microsoft.
Server.urls equals.
So the fact that you're having to put in Microsoft namespaces and classes means that there's a hook there, and you're having to write stuff to that hook, which implies that I could also do something there. Like if I was a hardcore low-level guy, I could write a Hanselman web listener.
Yes, you can.
Or whatever. And here, this is ASP.NET hosting.
Yep.
Could I do another kind of?
Yep.
What other things could I put there potentially?
So we have Noin today.
Noin.
It's
meaning,
an open source web server.
Noin.
Noin. Yeah.
Well, not no win. I mean, that was rude. I didn't mean it like that. Not Windows. You didn't mean to say they weren't.
I didn't mean that. No,
you didn't
no.
say they were not going to win.
No, no, of course not. Of course not. Of course not. Yeah. So no one is an open source web server. I'll show you the project. And it runs on both mono and .NET, full .NET.
Oh, no win. It's
no
not win. No Windows.
It's no
It's something
win.
No
it's
O-N.
N-O-N. I don't even know what the N stands for, but .NET. .NET.
Okay, so O-N is the open web interfaces in .NET.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a web server in .NET.
Yeah.
So you're using this person's stuff.
Yeah, so Boris wrote this
version. Boris did this.
Yeah, he did it. And it's a pretty cool web server. It runs cross-platform.
Who's Boris?
Some dude.
That's awesome. Respect to Boris who's making it happen.
Yeah.
So if some dude can do it, then I could probably do it. Yeah. Okay. So what's the parameters that are being passed in at the end there?
So. Before we showed, did we show console apps? We didn't.
We haven't done console apps.
Oh, we should.
Okay, let's do this and then we'll do console apps.
So this guy has a program main.
That has a main.
This has a main entry point.
Public static void main.
Yep. That main function takes in these arguments.
Where is that file? Where is
hosting?
Hosting.
Hosting came in via Helios.
Okay, that's. So I have no idea what that is.
I'm showing you. So I can dive into the graph. And it'll show me a whole bunch of references.
Oh, so that's hosting. Is that an EXE?
It's a package.
No, but like at the essence, is there going to be a .microsoft.asp.net.hosting.exe?
It's a EXE? Class library that has a main. We don't have any EXEs.
Oh, okay. So it's a DLL with a main.
Yep.
Okay, that makes sense. Because it's a DLL with an entry point that's explicit in public.
Correct.
Yep. Okay, cool.
Yep. His entry point takes in a bunch of arguments, which are the web listener, to launch.
Mm-hmm.
And it will call that guy and come back into your startup class. So one guy knows how to call this entry point, and the core runtime knows how to call the programming entry point.
Okay. So then Helios is that bridge between, in this case, IIS and us.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
So when I was, I mean, again, I'm speaking from a historical context. Yep. I remember when I was doing ISAPI stuff And when we switched from unmanaged code to .NET, we would always talk about how IIS used ISAPI to have an ISAPI extension to talk to .NET.
Yep.
There was that bridge. And that most people who do ASP.NET don't even think about that anymore. But back in the day, we had to manage those things. This is a bridge.
Integrated pipeline.
In the integrated pipeline,
yep.
Okay. Cool.
Yep. All right, so I can...
So you, can you run this from
the command line? One more thing, actually. I have to add a package.
Okay. So what do you have to add to self-host?
Microsoft ASP.NET Server Web Listener.
Okay.
Let me just put star here.
So then you can, this idea of you can put the star anywhere, it looks like, and just pick the latest one.
Yeah.
Okay. When you hit build.
It's latest.
Yeah.
With this prefix. Which makes sense, I guess.
Okay.
Kind of obvious, I hope.
I think it's obvious.
Okay.
And when you hit build, that's just like spell check.
I didn't hit build.
You didn't? You don't hit Control Shift B habitually? I just hit
I
it all the time. I'm just hitting it all the time.
It. It's kind of hard to not do it, but yeah.
It is kind of hard to not do it because it doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, yeah. It just
spell checks.
Give me errors.
Yeah, give me
whatever
errors.
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
So now I have Web Listener and all its dependencies, and that has dependency on hosting too.
Okay, so again, he typed that in and it just appeared there.
Yeah.
Because there's a file watcher on Project JSON.
Yep.
Okay.
That VS watches.
We're going to want to come back to what if I was in Notepad or Sublime and I don't have that file watcher. We'll ask that question
you
too.
Buy, you should buy VS.
You should buy VS. Or get the free version.
Yeah.
Okay, bigger
right.
fonts.
Let's navigate here. Oh, yes. Oh.
It's like Retina. 36 will be fine.
36.
There you go. Okay, is this the...
Should I squish it?
Is this the right location?
Nope.
All right.
Perfect. All right, I'll navigate to this guy. Oh, come on.
Alt space EP.
What?
You ever done that before?
That's too complicated.
No, man.
You just...
Like that.
You just paste.
Too slow.
Much
man.
Easier.
Too slow.
All
okay,
right.
So you're in the project. You're in the important part is that you're in a folder with project.json. That's
yes.
the key
file?
It has
file? To be a sibling, yeah.
Has to be a sibling. What does that mean?
I mean, it has to be direct where K is run from.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
It's okay, web. And I have,
you have debug
speed
on.
Turned on,
okay.
So you can actually see what's happening.
How can we turn on
instead
debug?
Of a long pause?
Can I see this too?
Yeah, so you set an environment variable, kre trace equals 1.
Ooh, I didn't know that. Kre trace,
yeah.
K runtime underscore trace equals 1 at
yep.
the environment, and I get the debug stuff.
Yep.
Okay, and you got K because why? How do you have K? Because I type K, I get not there.
I install KVM, the K version manager, the K runtime environment version manager. And this guy manages K versions on your machine. There's an NVM for Node, RVM for Ruby, and we just kind of made a similar thing. And this guy installs K runtimes into your machine. So by default, it goes into your user profile folder. So my user profile.
So on my machine, that's
kre.
Users, Scott, and then I've got a .kre folder.
Correct. And it has packages, bin folders, and a bunch of versions in here. And these are actually funny. I built custom runtimes because I'm working on the actual source, so I can actually build my own runtime and install it globally and use that to run to test stuff out.
So you're building this with itself?
Yeah, that's hot. Yeah,
that's pretty hot.
Yeah, we bootstrap.
So then you've got crazy. That's the versions that we're going to get. These
yep.
are your crazy versions that you're working on with the,
locally.
With the folks over here.
Yeah.
And then you can just open another DOS prompt, test it out, see
yeah.
what's going on, then pop
yep.
back.
Yep.
Okay, that's cool. So you typed go to KVM use and or list rather and show me which one you're on right now. So you're using 421. So you
yeah.
have one more better than me.
Yeah, sorry.
That's not really English.
This has some actually.
I had 420. You have 421,
this,
which
this
is
has some
be,
fixes actually.
It's got way better.
You should get it. It's good.
So we'll talk about how I would get that potentially
yeah.
in the future when that comes out.
There's also an alias command where you can set an alias for a version. So you can do KVM use default.
Ah.
Or KVM.
Because
yeah.
I was typing the whole thing and getting
yeah.
mad at you.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It's pretty
too
fun
much,
to watch.
Too much. Watching me type the whole thing. Okay, so you're on 421.
Yes.
Okay, so then run this app.
KWeb.
Debug stuff. Which is actually kind of interesting. I'm going to turn that on. Okay, and then they don't see, is IIS running in here anywhere?
No.
Okay, so let's look at Process Explorer then.
So the KLR.
Okay, so now we're on klr.exe.
Oh, let me start there first.
Okay, let me hold right there. So, interesting. So it's coming out of your packages folder. So when you typed K, that's probably an alias or a batch file or command file somewhere.
Yep.
Some PowerShell.
It's a batch file.
Batch file. Calls klr.exe, and it's picking out of the global one.
Oh, it went away.
But when I was doing it when I was doing the demo with Hunter,
yeah.
On deployment, I use one out of packages. So that means I have a choice.
Yep.
In this case, you're using the version 4.2.1 that you have on your local machine. I could do it. I could put that if I wanted. Could I?
Mm-hmm.
In the packages folder of my app and call it from there.
Yes.
Okay. So that it gets to the point of about power.
Yep.
Application base. And then what's dash live? Is that where all my NuGet packages are?
It's not. So the runtime itself has a bunch of support binaries that it has. And by default, lib folders, so there's two layers. There's a layer where you can point the KLR at a binary and say run that, and it finds a main and calls that entry point. There's a layer where you can actually have dynamic compilation and packages, and that's a layer on top of that layer. So this giant command line is saying, I want to run the actual application with this thing called the Microsoft Framework Application Host, and that guy is the guy who knows how to load Roslyn from source or a NuGet package from the packages folder.
So KRE is taking Microsoft Framework Application Host, and then that's the host. That's different, though, than the other host you were using before, right? You had ASP.NET hosting.
Different things, actually.
They're different things.
Yeah.
So explain those two, because the word host is in this, and then that means it's...
We're bad at naming, so we call everything hosts, because they're all hosts.
Okay.
KLR hosts.
So what kinds of things does this host versus that host? This hosts my web application.
Yeah.
What is that host?
This guy is the guy who understands how to compile Roslyn source into assemblies, and who can understand the dependency graph in your JSON file. And that hosting is the guy who understands how to call the startup class with the configure method.
Okay.
I builder. So he understands HTTP. And this guy is the core underlying framework.
See. Okay, so
really, there's three layers. Sorry.
So the executable is the process boundary.
Yes.
Then the Microsoft Framework Application Host is kind of like that app domain.
Comprehension
of all the things it's going to need.
Source.
And then now that we're ready to do that, we're going to bring in HTTP and do the things we need to do, and then load my web app.
Yep.
Okay. Now that seems like kind of a Russian doll, you know, kind of a thing, where it gets smaller and smaller. Are those thin layers? This is not going to affect. It's just an architectural artifact.
Yep.
Okay. So
super layered.
Is it? It's there's web. That is the command.
Yep.
Which then goes and calls Microsoft.ASP.NET hosting.
Yes.
So it's running right now on the command line, and you can listen to it. What port are we on? Do you remember?
I think
you can zoom out.
What did I put in here?
You put it on
8080.
8080.
I did. Okay. Can I click in here?
Localhost.
Does that work?
Localhost. Can you click there?
Oh,
I guess you could click there. Yeah, so then that works.
Yeah.
So then what does this mean for IIS? Like, do I need IIS? What does IIS provide, right?
Management. So you still want IIS because it has things like management. It has modules like basic auth. It has security.
Well,
there's
a whole pipeline, right? The integrated
pipeline.
So auth,
process crashes,
management, recycling of processes.
Yep. App pools are still good.
App pools.
Yeah.
Caching.
Caching. Yep.
So IIS.
Static files. So there's a bunch of useful modules there by default that you don't have to reinvent from scratch.
Right. Okay. So then IIS is a component container of another kind.
Yep.
More kind of at a business level.
Yeah.
And IIS gives me the scale and management of all these things. I can still manage it from IIS. So I wouldn't just start running my business app like foo.exe from the command line.
You could, but I mean,
probably not.
Yeah, it's your choice. Yeah.
Might I want something like this for like a small Windows service, maybe?
Yes.
That what other kinds of apps?
Lightweight APIs for REST, RESTful stuff, Signaler framework, real-time servers.
Okay.
Those kind of things.
Okay. Could we've got a DLL here, a class library.
Yep.
Better term.
Yep.
A web app. Could I or would I want to make a executable, like a foo.exe, and use the cloud-optimized runtime? Can we do that?
You could, but you can't. But I'll show you why.
But wouldn't I want to do that for like a web job or something like that?
Something
a command,
like that.
A command line.
You want an entry point.
You can't, but I can. You just,
so, yeah, you can't, but you can. Yeah. So you have a console app, but it doesn't create an exe. If I build this guy, building is kind
of... You're going to blow my mind.
So building,
you're not really building.
Building
anything.
Makes no sense because it just runs. So I'll just run this guy.
Okay, so this is cool. When I say, I bet you I know this. That's not an executable.
Yes.
So I can't just like take that executable and say, hey, it's console app one.
Right.
It's really a module, and I need to go and call the K runtime on it, and then it will go and do the things it needs to bootstrap, and it'll call me.
Correct.
See?
Boom.
Yeah, man. So can I work for your team?
No. So should we do a console app now?
Yeah, let's do a console app.
Demo. All right, so this is Hello World console app.
All right.
And from here, I'm gonna do K by itself. Hit enter.
Ah, before when we did K at the other demo, it crashed and it said I can't find main.
Yeah.
So here it totally found main and it called Hello World.
Yep. So if you look at this app, it actually has two files. A JSON file and a program CS. And the program CS has Hello World. No magic, right?
Yeah, it looks like anything.
But it ran, and there's no binaries on disk. So what happened? If you look at this crazy debug spew, it shows you what we actually loaded. It loaded the application host. It loaded a bunch of support binaries, including JSON.NET. That's going away soon.
Oh, OK, so there's JSON.NET. And why did it bring in JSON.Net? Because it needed to parse the project.json file.
Yep. It figures out the dependency graph, so it finds Hello World, which is your app, and it finds System Console, which is a package, and it has two different resolvers here. And then it keeps loading more stuff, keeps going, and it finds a bunch of packages that are a bunch of references for the stuff in the GAC, so MS Corelib System, System Core,
because this is using
full desktop.
So can you zoom in on that right there?
Loading Hello World for.
So, again, we're getting really technical here, and this isn't like messaging or marketing, this is just like reality. We're doing stuff that you may or may not want to do. Is there really a reason to use the K, well, in this case, the cloud optimized runtime environment framework and then just end up loading a desktop CLR anyway?
That only happens because we are actually targeting desktop.
Oh, because we targeted the desktop.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you could switch them over
in
the projects. Would you change that in the project.json?
So right now we're at a very, on the command line, you do KVM list again. And
oh, look at
we
that.
Have obscure names. This is temporary. Forget
it's all us. Temporary.
It's actually his fault, Lou's fault.
It's Lou, yeah, blame the people who are in the audience.
So SVR 50 is desktop.
Server.
Server 50, and then server core is what we call it.
So the C is core.
Naming is.
So your star is on build 421 server 50. So if you change that.
So KVM use default. It's because. And then SVR C 50.
50. Okay. And then do that, and then run it again. Oh, and there it is. So then it says Roslyn compiler found project Hello World framework K version 1. So now that's the cloud optimized framework. So then I might write a web job. A web job we talked a little bit about in our talk with Hunter yesterday is a current thing that you can use in Azure that allows you to have sidecar jobs within your web application. So if you had a web app where, like, say, users are uploading PNGs, and then you want to go and squish those PNGs.
Background process.
It's not really the kind of job that you want to do in real time. You'd have a background process do that. So then if you moved your application, your CMS or something, over into a cloud-optimized framework, you're going to want to bring your web jobs and your console apps and things with you. Now you can do that, too.
Yeah.
So that's
pretty
cool.
So to show both layers, the layer I was talking about that at the very bottom, if you didn't want application host, you could actually build this into a NuGet package.
Okay, so slow down.
Assembly, yeah.
So you typed K and it runs it. You typed K build.
Right.
And could you zoom in right there for me? Two things interesting there. Roslyn compiler in memory, Roslyn artifacts producer. The artifact is the build artifact.
Yep.
So what did you produce? A DLL?
A DLL and NuGet packages.
So emitting assembly.
Yep.
Can I find that assembly? Can you point to it?
Yep. Oh, did it again.
So now there's a bin folder.
Yep.
And
so you take the exact same process that happens in memory, and then at the very last minute you say, put it on disk to build.
Oh, okay. So it does build in memory the way it always did.
Yep.
And then you just freeze dry it.
Yep.
Nice. So there, and there's a PDB that I'm used to.
Yep.
Okay. So that's not so scary.
So you can see it. And then the lower layers, you would never do this in real life, but if I run KLR exe.
You would never do this in real life?
Not real life.
Sure.
Nope. Bin.
This is not real life.
I just passed a full path. This command?
Yeah.
It fails. Because of this.
Oh, so now what you're doing is you're writing the batch file that one would have needed to go and run that thing.
Right.
Ah, okay, cool.
So this is no more layers. It just runs your DLL only.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Okay, so go back and show us that nupkeg.
Nupkeg. Nupkeg.
Nupkeg.
Nupkeg.
Yeah. No.
You got it.
It's never going to happen for you. NuGet package there.
Yep.
There's a NuGet package. Did you open that up? So currently today, you can go and build stuff with CSC or VBC, and then you make a DLL, and then you go and get NuGet, and you say NuGet pack, and you make a NuGet package. And NuGet package is just zip files.
Yep.
A lot of people don't know that, but they're just zip files. You can open them up in 7-zip or whatever. Here, go ahead and zoom in on that. He's opened up that. So you've got those things unified.
Yep.
So project references, classes, nupkegs are all... I don't think that's so funny to say, are all one thing. You can produce those without NuGet. You didn't call NuGet.exe, did you?
Correct, I didn't.
This says unrecognized framework, because that's just a made-up thing that we've got.
Yep. That's why it says the same thing over here, unsupported version.
So can I, back before we made class library one, mm-hmm. that was in our other application, can we go back to that application, and instead of it being a source reference, be a NuGet package reference?
This guy.
So yeah, back over here, when you made Hello World, that one there, class one, you said hello.
Yep.
That's a class library sitting with our web apps, and it's just doing its own thing. Could you make that a NuGet package and then bring that in as a class?
Let's do that. So one thing that's different over here is that the JSON file actually has two configurations.
Yay.
It has net45, which is the full desktop, and it has this K10, which is the optimized version. And by default, this guy references MS Corelib and system, like you know today. And Karen, the optimized framework, actually has no default references, so you have to add a reference to system object. So if I actually remove this.
Oh, that's what system.object is inside?
Yeah. So if I actually build this now, it will fail and say you can't find string or
cannot
object.
Find system. Object, oh yeah, it's
Has anyone
apart.
Ever seen this error? Ever? Like, when compiling?
System.string is not
Never
defined.
Saw string. Yeah, so it's...
So wait a second. Are you saying that I really get nothing and I have to opt in to string?
Yeah.
We're serious about giving people choice. Because there's some person, I hate string, man. I'm going to write my own string. Before I do my startup, my new B2B startup, let's rewrite string.
So now
okay,
it's there.
That's cool.
I'll run build, and actually the build output in VS will show two things. It says...
You have to zoom in. Yeah. Notice, if you have to go like that, you may probably have to do that, too.
Let me just zoom in.
You're getting good with the zoom in. I know presenters that have been doing this for years that they're just like, what's happening? I don't know how you zoom in. You're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you. So it says walking graph, blah, 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 building class library for this target framework.
Okay.
And then it says, if I scroll.
Artifacts producer.
Yep.
So how did you get that to build? From I thought build didn't do anything.
For class libraries, it does. If you do a build step. Explicit build step.
So in VS, for web apps, it doesn't. But what about for web apps that reference class libraries?
In memory.
Okay. So I have a web app. It's the startup project.
Yep.
I go control F5. Build. It doesn't do anything. I click, right-click explicitly on the class library and say build, then it really does build.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
We should call it like something else, like flush.
Flush?
Let's not
call it flush. I think so it should be called build for
burn?
Real.
Build for real, okay.
Yeah.
Build harder.
Could you then, so now what do I do?
So
I want to get rid of that source.
One more thing. So it actually built for both target frameworks, so it built twice.
So this, of course it would want to build twice because I want to make sure it works for everyone.
Right. So this class library actually built for both target platforms, and it produced one nupkeg.
Is it possible in a world where I could have had an error on one framework and not another, and then I'd have to go and figure that out? Like, I've said here in configuration I want two, haven't I? By doing that, I've said I want two builds.
Yeah.
So if I use like system.drawing or system.wpf whatever thing.
So one example is like, let's app domain dot.
AppDomain.current. Is this something that I... Okay. So AppDomain current domain directory.
Yes, and it works great because it's in VS it says it's there.
Because it's available on the full framework.
Yep, then I hit build. It says, oh my gosh, can't find it.
Ah, so then, this is an example of a thing that's not in the new, the old tiny framework.
And then you're confused because you double click and it says it's green, but then it says it's not here.
So then presumably we'll have tooling to explain that to people. Yeah. You'll be able to say if you're targeting, if you're fanning out and targeting things. So it's kind of like portable libraries.
Yep.
You have to be aware of where you're going to be using stuff.
So you can, so by default, these configurations produce a default define. So you get one for each target framework.
Okay, slow down. So when I say Net4.5 or K10 or Foo, if Foo were a thing.
There's an implicit define.
An implicit pound define. Yep. So what's a define look like?
So in the actual code I can write, if Net4.5, do this. String.
Ah, message equals message plus or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, you won't be able to use string because S isn't in the K world.
What?
Oh, you're going to bail out. So I think if it's Net4.5, you show base, otherwise you say hello.
I have to fix it better. I'll just do path is equal to nothing, and then...
I see.
Right.
Cool. Does that make sense? That's pretty hot.
And now I should build.
Now, are those well-known configurations, or can I make my own?
You can make here. Well, they map to target framework. So these map one-to-one with the NuGet package. So some packages have like a bunch of different folders for different frameworks. The class library is a projection of that package in VS. So when you actually build, it creates a package that maps one-to-one with those folders. So in the bin output folder, you get one for each target platform here.
So if I said foo as a configuration, it's not a real thing. What
would
happen?
It would fill and say it's unsupported.
OK, that makes sense. Okay, so then the NuGet package, so it only made one of those, right?
One package, multiple target platforms.
There's one, all right. Nice. Show me the NuGet package. Before it just had unsupported. Now it's got both.
Full desktop and optimized framework.
Now that brings up an interesting point. Doesn't that mean theoretically that I could move some of my business logic and my models and different things into this shared library, have some apps running on full framework and some running on cloud optimized?
Yep, you can. So
did you just have, you're like, yeah, you can.
I made a thing up, You can.
That's good though.
And you can
I would want to do that.
You would actually. And you can see IntelliSense for the active target framework. We're still trying to make this a better experience because it kind of starts having to go this far into the properties to actually change the target framework. And if I do this, it should gray out this guy. Because now you're on
the actual
platform.
See, line 11 there got grayed out now because it's not Net4.5.
Right. And if I did, else.
Now, this is, again, low-level stuff, 400-level stuff. I don't want you all to think that we're proposing pound defines throughout all of your stuff. Don't get the idea that, the future of .NET is paved on the pound define. But you asked for 400-level content, and we're going to give it to you.
Pound defines are awesome.
Be cool with us.
We actually build our own stack. Like, our entire stack is built with this tooling and this code. So we actually use this to build MVC and the K runtime itself for different target platforms using this structure. So we kind of are trying to prove that it can work on a real project before we give it to you guys. So you should thank us for that.
Thank you, Dave.
Dog fooding is good.
Yeah, it is good.
So I'll add this other thing, application. This is a package to bring in that API on the core CLR application context.
Oh, interesting. So that's funny that you show that. So I thought when you went to program there that it was saying, you can't have application context.base directory. I'm like, that's bad. I kind of like that API. I need that.
Yeah.
There is an API.
In some, for some APIs, there are replacements. If I could find it. Did it? Oh.
Did you? You didn't really bring it in. I think
save?
You may have did undo.
Oh.
So that's interesting. So you're saying before we had dependencies. This is an interesting thing. While you're doing that, keep going. So he's got dependencies up there, which I understand because we were doing that before and he was typing his dependencies. But there he left it empty. Now he's got dependencies that are specific to the target framework. So he's saying, I want to depend on application context when I am targeting this runtime, otherwise that one. So you've got the dependency node. You could have some dependencies up here, and then the other ones override.
Yep.
Do they override or they add to?
They add to.
So it's a union.
It's union. So here I can do application
context. It's good to
context,
have that much control.
Base directory.
Base directory.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. You should feel good about that.
A clap.
Yay, golf clap. All right. When you were doing something before, I saw a file go by that was something.ni.dll.
Yes.
What's that about?
So by default today, when you install the full desktop CLR, we actually ngen the core format to native code, so there's no time for JIT. And now you have core CLRs on your machine. The question is, do you get the same benefits of that compilation? So the goal is when you install, well, when you KVM install our runtime per folder, we will actually cross-gen for you on the fly.
Okay,
and
so you said cross-gen.
Cross-gen, yeah.
So ngen
is full desktop
native code generation. You've seen ngen.exe, right?
Right.
And there was a time in .NET 2 when ngen was basically always running and doing stuff and trying to make sure that things were optimized.
Yeah.
So cross-gen is the ngen equivalent in this new world?
Yep. And it's not the new .NET native that's separate. This is actually the same old ngen technology from full desktop CLR brought to core CLR.
Okay, cool. It's not .NET native, but ngen still exists, still works.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would I ever want to do that myself, or I just let the system handle that?
Never.
Just gets handled for you.
It's handled for you.
Can you remove this and add it as a NuGet package now?
Yeah. So I'll build it. I think it's built already.
So you did an explicit build step on the class library, which makes the NuGet package with multiple targets?
Yeah. I'll put it in a different project because it's sourcing
here. So we'll use it from somewhere else.
Yeah. It's more realistic than a different project.
Good.
So create a new... What kind of app do I create? Console?
Whatever. Makes you happy.
Console.
I think it's funny to show console apps from a web context, but you're right. You can do different stuff with them.
All right, so now I have to put it in a place where I can actually find the package.
So you just make like a packages folder locally and have your own kind of private NuGet cache of stuff?
Yep, so we have this for our stuff. So I'll just copy this guy to my...
What about this other guy? What's dot symbols?
So the idea is to make... creating these packages as easy as possible so you never think about it. So when you build your class library, you get a package for your DLLs and a package for your sourcing symbols.
Ah.
And you put this on your symbol server, locally or on symbolsource.org, and you can debug any project that was built. That's the hope.
So currently, I do have to admit that, well, I love NuGet, and I've been talking about NuGet. I have to think about making NuGet packages. It's an extra build step. It requires thought.
Afterthought, yeah.
And I haven't even thought about symbols and stuff. That's just kind of like an afterthought.
Yep.
You're formalizing all of that.
Yeah.
And then you made a reference to symbolsource.org.
Yes.
Which is a symbol server as a service.
Yep, so I can actually bring it up here. Huh.
So this is a startup.
Yep.
This is not us.
Not us, yeah.
But we pay them, though, to use their stuff because we host our symbols there. So if you want to have like a NuGet server, there's things like MyGet. If you want to then have a symbol server, you could have symbol source. So then imagine a world where your continuous integration server is creating NuGet packages, creating symbols, then publishing them out to these as a service providers.
Or locally.
You don't want to sweat it.
Or
you,
locally.
You can do it locally, but I mean.
If you're enterprise, you can do it in your, on a share.
Somebody, I'm just saying, you know, help them out because they worked hard. Then you point your systems to these feeds, and then if I hand you a NuGet package, it can go and find that symbol and enable the debugging scenarios that we've seen.
Yep.
Okay, so then go back and inside of there you've got, in the lib, is it there again or just the PDBs?
That's PDBs and DLLs.
So it's both.
Yep.
So it's almost like the dot symbol one is like the debug version of the other one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And the source.
Oh, wow. You can even see this. Okay, cool. Did anyone know that existed already? No? That's good.
Really? Oh, cool.
All right, shiny. Okay, so then you're going to put that somewhere else.
I'll put this in my local feed, which is userprofile.nuget.
Well, that's an interesting idea. Is that your own care? Is that a real thing, or did you just make that up?
We made it a convention for our team.
Okay, so if you wouldn't mind,
I
want to go back to that. That's a good thing. I like that as a convention. We can make that a thing now, too. Nupcake is not going to happen, but this is cool. So what David has done is in his users David folder, he's got a .kre for his runtime stuff, but he made a .nuget file. I just have a C... \\\nuget stuff, but I kind of like this better as a convention. It's your own personal bunch of NuGets for
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so you put it in there.
And now I should be able to go through this project and include it.
That, I'm going to guess, the thing that's breaking there is probably the IntelliSense.
Yeah, it is.
This is another interesting thing. If you play with Web Essentials, just kind of stepping aside for a second, Web Essentials is our labs stuff, and all of the JSON editor, the CSS editor, the HTML editor are all extensible now. So if you're playing with that new, like, nightly builds of what's going on with Web Essentials, you might get errors like that. The error that he's getting is an extension crashed, but just the extension crashed, not Visual Studio. So in this case, while he went into the JSON editor and he tried to get some IntelliSense, he's on a daily build or whatever, it crashed. It didn't bring down his system. It didn't destabilize anything. It just gave up.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't want to deal with that, he could go and disable that extension. So that's another nice little thing.
And you can see errors for those things if you want to. But
if you want to.
Yeah.
All right. So this is the console app.
Yep. What do you call it? Class library?
Class library one.
That is so generic.
This is why I use poop. Because what I do then is I just go search for everything that says poop on my computer and just delete it all. Everyone else got like class library 46. I just like delete poop star dot star. There's a method to my madness, I'm telling you, man.
1.0.0.
All right.
And if we're lucky, there it
is. Do we require luck?
No, of course not. Come on.
So that's the NuGet. Now, how did it know that that was there? You have a NuGet path.
NuGet source. So this is we use the default NuGet feed and sources. So you can go into VS and manage your NuGet settings. Did I do that too fast?
No, that's good. Right there.
Have you guys seen this before?
Everyone has. They know about that. So NuGet people know about that stuff.
That's what I had.
So here you put local first.
Yeah.
So local overrides.
Yep.
And then that example that I showed in the previous talk, where I brought in a source. Why does package.json not care? Like, it just looks for source first? How did we do that?
So source always wins over binaries. And that's baked into the system.
Okay. And then it looks at these in order.
Yes.
For stuff.
Yeah.
So in this example here, he's got his local machine. He's got a MyGet feed. MyGet, again, is NuGet as a service. And the ASP.NET team uses that service.
Yep.
So then his daily builds are there. And then if it's not there, it goes and looks at NuGet proper. Cool.
Cool.
All right. So then that worked.
So now I should be able to get the API here.
And then boom, he's got the API. And that came right out of the NuGet.
Yep. Yep.
Is that cool? All right, good.
No applause for how easy this is.
No, they don't. They're all applauded out. But I think you're doing a good job. So yes, I'm applauding in my mind.
Yay.
Let's get a little bit more down into the details. So we get all of that. Let's talk about, a little bit about dependency injection. Is that
okay?
Cool?
Yeah. So let's go back to the website. So in every site, you'll see this use services, which gives you a place to add services.
And what are services?
Things that we require for the framework to work. So MVC, as it is in this new build, needs this to run.
So if I don't opt in for MVC, even though I added it as a reference, MVC won't happen.
If I comment this out and run it?
Well, that'll probably fail.
Ah. Yeah. Let's show the failure.
So it's a collection of services. Is it like a pipeline, or is it just a bundle of...
A big list of services.
A big list of stuff.
Yeah.
And what's an example of services? MVC, Web API?
Controller factories.
Yeah, that's because
action selectors. There's a whole bunch of things. Loggers.
So what might I write? Could I write, like, if I wrote a service for
controller factory, for example?
Controller factory,
yeah.
Generating images or
yeah.
doing anything
yeah.
at all that is a service my app might
EF
need.
Context, anything.
So
yeah.
even Entity Framework would have to be brought in as a service.
Yep.
And that all gets put into a bundle there. This is like a lambda of just a
yeah.
Add so this, you say add this, add this.
Services, add more stuff, add
okay, so
MVC.
Zoom in on that and show us what we've got by default.
Cool.
So, yeah, there you go. So zoom in right there. Come down. So this is an important thing to note, and it took me a while to figure this out. It seems obvious after the fact, but just to be clear, everything that has the little arrow pointing down is an extension method that got brought in. So here, MVC is an extension. If he removes MVC as a namespace, that's not going to appear there. Would you mind bringing in Entity Framework?
Sure.
So, of course, you'll be able to add reference with a gesture at some point, but he's going to do it this way. which I kind of like, actually. That drop down is pretty hot. If it was a little smarter about
where things coming from,
looking for stuff, it would be cool.
Entity, in memory, I guess.
That's fine.
Let's copy and paste this one. Because I'm lazy.
All right.
All right. It says adding reference, and then it's.
Now, does it go out to the to the internet?
So for me, no. It's going to my local cache because I want to be fast on stage. So that's really good.
How will it work for them if they want to go out to? And they're not going to want to have to go out to the internet all the time as well.
Yeah. They'll have probably have fixed build numbers, so it's not as slow.
So it went out to the internet because you said dot star.
Yeah.
It didn't have the latest here, and dot star implies I really want the latest, so it has to always
check. So please check, yeah.
So I'll just go and say entity 1.0 or whatever, and it'll be ready, and it'll just happen.
And actually, there's a bug here because it's not finding this guy locally.
Okay.
So let me disable my cache and see if this works on the internet. I'll cross my fingers. This is not.
Yeah, don't look at that.
Don't look at that. Doesn't exist.
Secret thing.
I'll save this thing again.
Okay, package restore in progress on the lower left corner there.
I can look here at
You can actually see it happening. Attempting to resolve dependency. What it's doing is it's going off kind of quietly. Now, it's a really important thing to point out. We haven't shown you this or had to think about this yet. The goal is you don't think about this.
It's in the background. It just happens.
So you're seeing, again, debug spew, as we call it. You're just seeing all of this stuff. There it is. It just found it. IX async installing, and now it's got it, and it's cool. So then that little the little yellow thing disappeared, and now we're cool again.
Awesome.
Okay. So he just brought an anyframe. So go back over into startup for me and hit services dot and zoom in. Add entity framework now shows up as a extension. That's how a service should show up. You ask for it, but you don't get it built into your app for free. You opt in.
Yep.
Okay. Now, we're talking about dependency injection. Add scoped. What else do you have down there?
Add instance and add transient.
Okay. Add scoped. Scoped to a scope like a request?
To a thing.
To anything.
Yeah.
Up to you.
And then, so by default, this guy creates a request scope. So when you create things in that request, it'll get disposed at the end of the request.
At the end of the request. So it's scoped to the request. Can it be scoped to other things, or is really only the request?
You can create scopes arbitrarily.
Okay.
But by default, we have that one scope for requests.
Singleton makes sense. Yep. What is a transient?
Transient is, it means whenever you ask for a service, it will create one every time.
That means a factory. It's like new every single time.
Yep.
Okay, no matter, I can ask for it multiple times per request.
Yep.
So it's a slider bar between there's just one, or there's one every time you have a request, or there's one every time you ask.
Yes.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
That's good. That means I understand.
Yep. Awesome. So add EF, and you did someone already. Oh, well, just added memory.
Well, I want to understand. There are people who have already decided on, or they prefer a certain dependency injection. Which one is this? Is this Unity, or is this something just a tiny IOC that we made ourselves?
This is a tiny built-in, not a container. You can't call it that.
Not a container.
It's a thing that is enough to work for our stack.
Okay, so it's just a super basic tiny IOC.
Yeah.
Not IOC.
Yeah.
Tiny dependency injection.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you don't have a preference, then you use this one that's built-in.
I see.
Or you can swap it out for Autofac or an injector, Windsor, structural wrapper.
So you can totally swap it out?
Yes.
Okay.
I wouldn't do it now just because
it's not a little
fully fleshed still yet.
It's a little early, but it is absolutely the intent that you you do your own.
You'll do Autofac dot create.
Oh, it would be a service, wouldn't it?
What?
Would Autofac be a service? Autofac is a third party open source example of a dependency injection.
It'd be a library that's like Autofac dot create.
You're writing. I love it that you're writing the code in the comment because it's so not real. It's in a comment.
Let me zoom in.
And then you're going to go and show someone back at the office, and you're going to say, "Hey,
we have
this thing in a comment. Can you make that real so I can uncomment it?"
We have a. framework.
Microsoft framework dependency injection. Okay, so that's our little one.
Yeah. Notice that I don't have to add it here because it came in via something else. That's why I get IntelliSense for it.
Ah.
So if you try to find it somewhere in this tree, MVC has a reference to it. So here.
Ah, there it is. So it's already there. because of that. And that's another interesting point. The projects.json shows you the top level packages, and the references shows you the complete dependency tree. It'd be cool to have a way to type that at the command line and see the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's interesting because we actually give you IntelliSense for the entire tree, not just your one reference. That's why you can actually get configuration and stuff through other references, which is very different today.
And then we saw before in that example in the 101 talk where I did the basic dependency injection, you just say add scope.
Yep.
I did it without an interface, but presumably you can do it with interfaces in any way
all
that you want to.
Yep.
Okay.
So in MVC, we actually show off controllers can have no base class now. This is a new thing in MVC vNext. So this guy is a home controller, and it's done purely by convention, so the name controller.
It's not derived from controller?
It's not derived from controller,
Can you derive from controller?
You can.
Might you? Why would you do that? What do you get?
To get the nice base class, so you get context.
You get
view context, you get helpers, so you can return view.
So this gets more into the choice of opting in. Like, you can literally opt into nothing.
Yep.
And how would you get a hold of stuff? Like, what value would you have at this point?
Well, because we have DI plugged in everywhere, you can actually just ask for things like an iAction result helper. And then you can create a property called result.
Again, really low level stuff. We want to make sure you're clear that there's going to be a class of developer who's going to go file new project. They're going to hit ASP.mvc, and they're going to just work, and they're going to do their jobs, and it's going to look and feel and act like MVC. Okay? SignalR, Web API, it is still the thing you expect. But all those times when you're getting into something and you bump up against a door, and you're like, this door is locked. You unlock the door and you knock it down because there's really no door. And then you switch that thing out. That's the intent. Because we need to understand that there's this slider bar of complexity, and there's going to be a class of developer who's just like, hey, man, I just need to get her done. And then there's another one that's going to want to do whatever the heck that is. So iAction result, you're like, I've always hated iAction result helper.
Yeah.
And then they'll go and they could change and add scoped, and they could say, well, I want my iAction result.
So you can
helper.
Change the content result or JSON.
Okay, so this is the current one.
Yeah.
When you are in MVC and you do an action, there's a helper that goes and decides, like, I want to go and return some HTML. I want to go and return some JSON. And if you've always hated that, you could write your own and implement iAction result helper. Then I'm a guess. You'd add scoped.
You don't have to.
You would just automatically, how would it know and get mine?
It knows, because of this guy.
It knows. Well, that's not comforting.
It just knows.
So how would it, but I want to make
one of the
Scott action result helper.
Well, you do.
Yeah, man. That it doesn't know. You have to tell it, right?
It knows by default, but for
no,
your
but it doesn't
yours,
know about me.
Yours,
yeah, no, but it's about yours.
Yes.
Because internally, you're doing all that secretly, right? But if, there you go. I action result helper, super Scott action result helper, and then I'm taking over.
Yep.
Some crap. Right, and then at that point, I've taken a fundamental part of MVC and swapped it out.
Replace it.
Awesome. All right, cool.
Sure, this works.
Yeah, let's see if it works. yes. Okay. Dun, dun. How do we know it works? What's going to happen?
It'll not crash.
Not crashing is our load minimum bar now?
Yeah.
All right. Like that? File IO exception, it couldn't load strongly named. What's that?
Oh my God.
Oh, it wants some, that's some third party deal.
Yeah.
Another one of those NuGet packages failed to restore.
Oh my gosh.
Remotion, it's underneath Entity Framework. Pull Entity Framework out.
Let's try something else.
No, pull Entity Framework out. So go and yank Entity Framework out of your project, Jason.
That'll work.
If I may be so bold as to suggest to the developer.
Makes sense.
All PMs really know how to do is delete stuff. So I'm bringing my deleting email skills to deleting project references.
All right, it's gone now. So no, it should
work.
Work
now? You realize the respect I'm going to get if this works?
No.
Yeah, you got to get rid of that too. You got to delete some more stuff there, dude. Have to make, yeah. I need 8 red lines all perpendicular to each other. All right.
All right, this should. Yay!
All right. So you are not derived from controller.
Nope.
But you went result.json, which is usually something that I do in web API.
Yep.
What's going on?
So we have the helpers, so IE, thank you for giving me JSON.
Do it in Chrome.
I don't think I can change the default.
Or curl.
What's the address, though?
8080? Oh. I don't know.
It's some random port. I think I can figure it out from the project, actually. This could be a good segue into like what's in the actual project file.
In the next 9 minutes, we'll do that. But let's see that JSON come back first. So 63238. Is it running?
I believe so.
A little high DPI trouble there.
I may believe wrong.
You have to run it.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Is it running?
Oh. No. It's a heavy startup project, yeah. Okay, so then switch over and let's see it. 63238. All right?
Looks right.
And then zoom in on that. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Okay, so that means that Web API and MVC are unified.
Merge. Yep.
So that means breaking changes then.
It does.
Are the breaking changes scary, horrible breaking changes? Or are they mostly renaming of stuff and changing of classes? How bad is it? Someone asked me about breaking changes, and the thing is, when something goes from major to major,
yes,
you have to expect breaking changes. You don't think you're going to go file open MVC3 app, and you've been like, I've just been sending data sets around, everything's been cool. You're going to automatically update me, right? You set your expectations. And this isn't a Microsoft thing, this is a computer science thing, right? You know, Rails 1 and Rails 4 don't upgrade cleanly.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's going to be namespace changes, there's some interface changes. The concepts still apply because I'm used to action results, things like that. So would you recommend...
The internals have been kind of gutted and redone. So
if you
did extend it, it would look a little different.
Okay. Would a way to put that is that if I'm doing basic stuff, you know, a standard kind of classic line of business app, I'll have a lot less breaking changes than if I completely customize the framework with my own DI and
custom and
rip the guts out. So if you rip the guts out of MVC 4 and 5... to achieve your business goal, expect pain.
Some changes, yeah.
And if you did some basic MVC stuff, then it'll be less pain.
Less painful, yeah.
All right. So you said result.json, but that's actually the helper, the iAction result helper.
Yep.
And that looked pretty basic right now.
It's equivalent to controller and returning JSON from here.
Ah, interesting. So pull those out then. So you see that? So he went and said, derives from controller, and now he can say return JSON from here. And it feels more like Web API. Well, that's a basic example.
Yeah. So we did bring back some of the old stuff from MVC to make it more compatible. So filters are similar and so are...
Okay, so if I wrote my own filters or model binders, I might have to change those and fix those up.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Okay.
The HTTP context is a new one. It isn't the same one from System Web, so this is a new namespace.
Now, this is a really, really important thing. You may not necessarily want to be poking around anyway in HTTP context. And if you're an MVC programmer, you know that messing about in HTTP context is fraught with peril. Because the idea is if you want an application that is test-driven and has the ability to be run outside of a context of IIS or even ASP.NET, you can't really test your controllers if they're doing this.
Right.
This is not system.web HTTP context.
It's a different namespace.
And that means... System.web right now, you know, is in the global assembly cache.
Yes.
And one of the things that's worth pointing out is that in Windows right now, you know, we've been shipping ASP.NET MVC and SignalR and Web API as open source, as out of band, but there's a piece of us that still ships with Windows, right? The .NET framework ships with Windows, therefore System.web ships with Windows. So why are we getting away from System.web? What we're trying to do is make it so we can ship faster than Windows ships. And we can ship in a more modular way. So we couldn't do crazy stuff with HTTP context while it remained in Windows and shipping with Windows.
Or change the error page.
Or change the error page, or that's just an example that we use, but that kind of stuff. But at the same time, this is not like a complete right turn in a totally different direction. It's more of like a fork in the road. So if you've got existing apps that are using System Web, that's full framework. The full framework lives on, and this core framework, this cloud-optimized framework, is an option.
Yep.
Someone came by earlier and asked about an app that had different sections, and he got a sense that, you know, 60 to 80% of the app was going to be fine on the cloud-optimized, but he was doing some crazy stuff over here. Maybe split those things up.
Yeah.
Maybe consider multiple services. Maybe one monolithic app is now an app with several services, some of which are full framework and some of which are not.
That helps a lot, actually.
Let's talk a little bit about global JSON, if that's okay.
Sure. So by default...
In the remaining few minutes.
Yeah. So by default, the way reference to a project works, there's no path. So the question is, how does it know where to find this guy? And by default, it looks in a sibling folder. So this just happens to work because these are all in the same directory.
So it's looking in siblings or packages?
Right. Yep.
Okay.
So I'll give you an example of like a real project because we actually dev in this stuff.
Is this a real thing that you built?
So this is like the actual K runtime.
Oh, wow.
So
are we going to really open that right here?
Just
I guess you could.
Just a global JSON.
It's open source.
For now. So the global JSON has a source.
You need to zoom in on that for me.
Has a source property.
Okay, so the
sources property.
The thing that builds the next generation, you're using that tool we talked about.
Right.
It has its own global JSON.
Yep.
But where's source? Is that a peer?
So source, so what this guy does, it tells the runtime where to find other projects. So source has a bunch of projects.
Ah, so you didn't have a full path. You just said source, which is a sibling.
Yep. Well, it's yes.
A sibling to the global.
To global JSON, yeah.
Relative to global.
Yeah. So the test folder in here, the test projects need to access the actual source projects. And the way you do it is by saying you can find more stuff in the source folder.
Okay. And when I switched from using NuGet packages to sources, because sources always trump binaries.
Right.
That's how it did that.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
So the runtime always looks here for projects first, and then it says find a package for that same
thing. Can you show us the projects.json for the ASP.NET vNext?
For the actual
runtime? Yeah, the real thing. Where's your projects.json? Like for a big one.
Oh,
wrong JS.
One.
All right. So he's got a version number in there, some compilation options, it's in pound defines.
Defines.
Right? Dependencies, we know that. Other dependencies for specific versions, because you build twice, right? Full framework. And then this is interesting. See how he's bringing in a bunch of little stuff? That's because it's broken up into pieces. You're just picking the ones that you want.
Yep.
Now, some people find that concerning.
It's a little bit concerning.
Because it seems like more stuff, but it's smaller stuff.
It's smaller stuff, yes.
So if you don't want regular expressions, you don't pay for it. You don't bring it along.
It's so small that even the XDocument and XReader are separate packages. Next, most others are different.
Oh, wow. Things. So you're not bringing in system.xml.
Yeah.
It's not broken down per class, though. It's
kind of per
logical section.
Yeah.
So I've done things with XML Reader before, but I might not want XDocument and XML Serializer.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
And we're going to make packages to make this easier. So we have a few that are kind of preliminary. So if I type in, for example, k.commonfx, 0.1.
That's preliminary, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just naming.
So just like when I say MVC, it's a package of packages, I may never think about those other packages.
Right. So now it's restoring. Oh, it should have probably gone local again. Oh, it's there.
So what's that going to get?
K.collections, which has more
Zoom
stuff.
That. So that brings in some link stuff and some collections and some I.O. Okay.
Yep.
So that's an example of what a possible meta collection might look like.
Yeah.
Cool. So go ahead to the GitHub page, and we'll make sure that people know where they can get this stuff. So GitHub/ASP.NET. You can get these bits today. I want to make sure you understand how early this is and how we're really trying to give you a peek behind the curtain. But now all the work is going to continue, and you can get involved by just watching the commit messages. Are you committing to this repository? Or are you committing to some secret repository?
I actually have a pull request.
And then we tell people about it. You have a pull request already?
To prove that it's real.
So someone put in a pull request 20 minutes ago.
This is mine.
Who's this one? He wanted to change something. Yeah, here's another little tip. Don't just send in pull requests where you ran ReSharper on the whole thing and then...
like this one.
Hold off on this change. I thought you were in the middle of a presentation. That would have been funnier. Right, yeah. So then there's a pull request. So we're going to be doing this work here. You're going to be able to watch the issues. You're going to be able to watch the commits as they happen.
Yep.
So that is the next version of .NET, and we are Scott Hanselman, David Fowler, and we've got Mike and Lewis here as well to answer questions. So thank you so much. Have a great time at TechEd.